Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of the Purdue University Global Collegiate Entrepreneurs Podcast. The mission of the Purdue University Global Collegiate Entrepreneurs is to carry out the mission of the National Chapter, which is to inform, support, and inspire college students to be entrepreneurial and seek opportunity through enterprise creation. Well, today we have a great podcast. We're going to meet with Scott Barnett, the author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gump from Movie to Restaurant. And Scott's journey in the restaurant industry commenced as a teenage parking attendant at a popular steakhouse in Palm Desert, California. Opting for the challenge path, he engaged in various roles within the business, including cooking, serving, and bartending, all while working his way through college. With a rebellious and irreverent approach, he entered the corporate world, fostering a belief that the restaurant business could be revolutionized. Taking charge of a struggling company, he and his team not only saved it, but also sought avenues for growth, leading to the inception of the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company restaurant concept. And let's go right into our interview with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gump from
Movie. I love the movie Forrest Gump, Scott. I think, I think I'm one of those people who identified with Bubba's character for my love of shrimp, and I got the chance of working in the seafood industry for several years. Why did you think the creation of an entertainment restaurant based on a single movie like Forrest Gump could be successful?
You know, at first I wasn't sure, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
We really weren't certain that this could work. What really caused me to think to change my mind was that when I really screened the movie and looked at it, and I realized that that Zemeckis, who was the creator and
right.
producer and director, was really bottling magic in a certain way. And and then as we looked at the research that came out of it, what we learned was there was an unforced translation from a movie to a restaurant, and it really made sense that such a thing would exist. So on the basis of that, and of course the needs of the company, that's why we went ahead and did it.
That's fantastic. We're speaking with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gump from Movie to Restaurant. And Scott, what prompted you to work in the restaurant industry? It seems like, there's something that you like about that particular industry.
You know, it was really by chance. I was working in a gas station in Palm Desert, California, and I was saving up money for college. And I ended up borrowing a friend's motorcycle and put it down on a gravelly curve and broke my ankle and tore up my hands. I couldn't work, and so I had to put college off. And when I was able to work again, I started as a valet parking attendant at a restaurant. And one day, a hostess came out and said, "Hey, you're going to bus tables tonight." And I did. And the hours just sort of flew by. The work was hard, but it was a lot of fun. And
right.
And I felt like we were putting on nightly theater every night. And we were doing it better than anybody else in town. So out of that came this kind of desire to continue doing it. So when I did go on to college, which I eventually did, I kept working as a cook and bartender and
right.
so on. And just got in my blood, I guess.
It sounded like it was your destiny, from a young age. And it sounded like those, in reading the book too, Scott, that, those owners of that particular restaurant that you were working for, they had a big impact on your life as well, didn't they?
They did. The whole thing was is that they treated it as kind of an amalgamation of family and business, and it was really unique. And I thought, this is something I really like doing. And when I worked before, it was you always referred to your boss as Mr. Johnson or Mr. Anderson, and this guy was just Lyman. And it was really a very different and really kind of fun way of looking at your professional life, if you will. And that's really what it was.
That's fantastic. For our listeners, Scott, who may have never been in a Bubba Gump Shrimp Company restaurant, what makes Bubba Gump so different from some other like entertainment restaurants like Planet Hollywood or Hard Rock Cafe?
Well, we in the end, the restaurant business is really about some very basic things. It's about hot food hot, cold food cold, service with a smile in pleasant, clean, interesting surroundings, and so on. But I think what makes Bubba Gump different is that we had come from a background. We had actually been running a company called Rusty Pelican Restaurants, which was an upscale seafood dinner house And so when we came into this so-called eatertainment, which is a kind of a mix of entertainment and restaurants,
right,
we brought with us kind of a stronger and I think better quality filters in terms of the food product and the service and what have you. So when we did Bubba Gump, we actually wanted to make it a restaurant. A lot of these people who get into that business from the entertainment side, they think they're in the trademark business, or they think they're in
right,
you know, something else. And the reality is, you know, you're in the restaurant business. And so that's how we looked at it. And I think it made us pretty different from a lot of our competition.
Why is the restaurant business so difficult, Scott?
You know, I think people make it difficult for one thing,
mm-hmm,
but something else really is that the restaurant business it's very capital intensive. It's very, meaning you need some money to do it. And, you know, if you miss somewhere on the life cycle curve and you're putting something out there that people just don't want, I don't care how good you are, you're just not going to make it, because
right,
you've got to listen to the customer. They're the ultimate arbiter, and they decide what is desirable and what is not. And there's a very high failure rate, as you know, and I think most of it has to do with being undercapitalized, not being in the right location, or just not giving people what they want when they want it.
Yeah, I think that's well said. We're speaking with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gumption from Movie to Restaurant. And Scott, whose idea was it to include a retail store that sold Forrest Gump merchandise right inside the restaurant? That was very clever. Was the retail store your biggest surprise?
Yes, it was. We all knew we were going to do a retail store. We just did,
right,
I think that everybody, because the hats and T-shirts had been a huge part of Bubba Forrest Gump,
right,
in terms of the movie. And they had, believe it or not, I mean, Paramount was shocked at the amount of hats and
wow,
T-shirts they sold. And so when they did, we thought, well, we'll do that, but we're not going to do it halfway. We'll actually do a real store, unlike, say,
right,
Planet Hollywood, which had a or Hard Rock Cafe, which had just a counter which you walked up to and there were T-shirts on the wall, and you sort of picked one out and bought it. And so it was a huge surprise to us and a happy one. But in the end, we knew we weren't going to be a retail store. We were going to be a restaurant,
right,
that contained a retail store. And so it worked really well for us. We did about 15% of our sales, and it grew into,
wow,
it really grew into a $30 million business. But
that's incredible.
In the end, I mean, you still have to be a restaurant.
That's fantastic. I mean, there was a lot of innovative things that, you know, that went on. The hiring of a Forrest Gump impersonator to be present at restaurant openings, I mean, that was another great example. And I saw that on the internet. How successful was that?
That was really something. I was standing outside working on the sign at the first Bubba Gump in Monterey, California, and we were, as a guy kind of walked by out of the corner of my eye, and he's in white. I thought, that guy looks like Forrest Gump.
Right.
So he goes into the restaurant and talked to my director of marketing, Kathy Peterson, and she comes out and she goes, hey, you've got to come in here and see this guy. And I did, and it turned out he was dressed in the same suit that Forrest was in the movie, and
right,
he had a checkered shirt with a suitcase, and he was in Nike sneakers, and the guy looked a lot like Tom.
Oh, my God.
And he'd gotten his haircut like Forrest. And so I said, well, we'll hire him for the opening, and it'll be a novelty. Well, we ended up keeping him for a long time.
Wow.
And he must be the most photographed guy in America.
I thought it was Tom Hanks. Yeah, when I saw it too, Scott, I mean, I thought it was, I mean, he looked just like Forrest Gump, the character. I mean, it was
yep,
identical. I mean, it really was very clever, you know, so I thought that was great. I was mentioning to you, Scott, I teach for a university and I teach marketing, and restaurants are essentially a marketing business. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the four P's of marketing and how a new graduate can really understand the mindset of a restaurant CEO.
Sure. I mean, it, the four P's of marketing, as you know, if you're instructing in a university or college, is that, you know, it's for price, promotion, place, and product. And
mm-hmm,
and we I always kind of viewed my approach to the business that way. I think that in terms of Bubba Gump, we really looked at that and kind of devised a marketing strategy out of that. And then, you know, and looked at it from the standpoint of our strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and so on, just as you would any strategic plan or business plan. And then we developed our marketing plan around that. In terms of pricing and product and promotion and all that, we really looked at Bubba Gump, and we did a lot of research, a lot of market research around it after we had gotten it open. We didn't do market research beforehand because there was nothing to do research about.
Right.
Once we did, you know, we spent an inordinate amount of time doing research at every opening, both quantitative and qualitative. So we would do quantitative research like what we call nose counting, where we'd put a questionnaire in front of 300, 400, or 500 people. And then get a statistically significant response.
Right.
And things like what did you like about it, what you didn't like, and so on. And then we did focus groups, a number of them over the years, that where we would talk about what the impressions were and get an idea of what the overall general feeling was about the company. In terms of the menu itself, the product, and so on. I mean, and by the way, we view the product as not just the food. We also
right.
viewed it as the overall experience, the tenor of the service, the how people viewed the ambiance and the atmosphere. And in the end, I mean, what we were trying to create was what I'll call an emotional souvenir that people could take with them and do what is most important in the restaurant business, which is create a memorable experience that they're not only seeing, but they're part of. And so that's part of the engagement that we tried to do, was to get people to be a part of the experience as much as they were to, quote, experience it, unquote. And that was really, I think, where the product that we created was kind of unique.
That's fantastic. I have my marketing students listen to that clip. I think what you just said there is fantastic. Well, speaking of location, you know, we're talking about the marketing mix, Scott. I mean, you did some interesting things with locations. I mean, you took you looked at poor performing restaurants that were in great locations. What were some of the biggest location challenges that you experienced?
I suppose one of the things that people do is they say, oh, well, I'm going to locate on the pier, or I'm going to locate in
right.
this place, and that'll solve the problem. And really, it's not. You have to. It's a little bit like putting some attention to detail so that you get the whole. You don't just go 9 yards and miss the first down. I guess the biggest challenge we ever had on a great location that was really not doing well was San Francisco at Pier 39, where. They were at the end of the pier, had a great view of all three bridges, the Golden Gate, the Bay Bridge, and so on, and yet you couldn't find the place. So we were able to negotiate a deal where we put a sign, huge sign, giant sign at the base of the pier, and saying, we're here at the end of the pier. And then second, it was on the second floor, which is typically the kiss of death for restaurant locations, but we got the landlord to put an escalator up with our treatment on it. And then finally, it was sort of on the perimeter of the pier. So we projected our presence into the center of the pier by leasing the space in front of us and then cladding it with our treatment. So we were able to take a restaurant that had barely done $2 million and turn it into a $12 million restaurant with our name and so on. So, I mean, there's things you have to do. You can't just say, well, I'm going to be here on the beach and think that
right.
I'm going to do it. You got to do a lot of other stuff.
You have so much experience in the restaurant industry. You know, it's interesting because it probably all that experience, I don't know if it prepared you for, you know, what was it like dealing with Paramount Studios, Scott? I mean, that had to be something new for you.
You know, I likened dealing with Paramount as to dealing with armed preschoolers. You have to be really careful. But in the end, I mean, they're very tough negotiators. They're very
right.
Contrary to what everybody may think, the Paramount, you know, the movie business likes money, And they get after it pretty hard. But in the end, I have to say this about the people at Paramount. They took a risk with us because, you know, we were a company that had been in Chapter 11 because, when I took over Rusty Pelican, it was technically insolvent. So we had to reorganize it. And they went with us over, groups like Darden or Brinker and so on, which much bigger companies, because our vision was consistent with theirs. And they took a chance. The mantra in Hollywood is don't do anything that'll get you fired. And they took a risk with us, which was we were fine with. So in the end, we got the deal done.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I know you talk about it in that in the book. In going international, you decided to use franchising as an alternative to expand, Scott. Why franchising, and what was that experience like for you?
You know, the reason for franchising, we didn't franchise domestically and don't. And they still don't, although, we sold the company in 2011, but they don't franchise domestically now. But internationally, it makes total sense to do that or license it, one or the other, because, there are so many different countries and so many different ways of doing business and rules and laws and regulations. That it would be very presumptuous for someone to think that they could operate a business in any overseas market. Now, we did operate a business overseas in Hong Kong. We were joint ventured that deal, and we were the operating group that did it. On the other hand, we'd also joint ventured in Mexico, and we would never presume to try to operate in Mexico. Our partner was an experienced restaurant guy, and his team operates the restaurant, and rightfully so. So I think you just have to match your needs and wants with what the market will bear at the particular location that you're doing it. We looked at the whole world. We hired a company called Cine Little. Jim Little was the guy we used, and he did a study of the whole world and said, okay, this would be franchise. This would be no, don't go there, and this would be joint venture territory. So. That's how we kind of viewed it.
I remember, I think you mentioned in the book, too, it was some difficult experiences. Was it in Manila, Scott? I mean, you talk a little bit about that. What happened? If you could talk a little bit about what happened there. I thought that was interesting.
Well, in the book, Gumption, I talk about Manila as being where we first where we got a spanking, is the way I describe it.
Right.
We got involved with a group who were essentially swindlers, and they developed kind of a network of people within the Philippines, and we signed up with them. They were one of the first franchisees we were with, and they ended up with money trouble, as you would expect, and they were looting the company as well as looting some other companies. And over a period of time, we got more and more dissatisfied with them, and I went over and said, "Look, I want to be paid, number one. I want this to happen, that to happen, and so on." And they abandoned the restaurant on Christmas, just before Christmas. And I ended up getting a phone call and had to fly over there and take over and operate myself the restaurant, because our VP of franchise had some personal issues he was dealing with, and it was my deal. So I ended up on New Year's Eve in Manila, sitting at the Peninsula Hotel and you couldn't go outside because I think the chapter title is Raining Bullets in Manila. You couldn't go outside on New Year's Eve because they fire their guns in the air and the bullets come back down. And I guess there's thousands of bullets flying back to the ground. You can't go outside. So,
oh, my God.
Pretty funny.
And that's what I love about the book, is your sharing of all these different experiences, the ups, the downs, and, everything in between. I thought it was fantastic. A lot of our listeners that listen to Franchise Interview, Scott, we call them, a lot of them are aspiring restaurateurs. I mean, they want to, own their own, franchise or a restaurant. What lessons can you pass along to them in their quest?
Well, I would say this, that in there's a chapter in the book called CEO Lessons that I talk about where in the book Gumption, where I talk about what I learned and what I think are important things to remember. But one of the things is keep it simple, stupid is a principle that I learned from the founder of Rusty Pelican, Pete Syracuse, a really smart restaurateur and entrepreneur. And he was always saying, you know, but don't overcomplicate it. Keep it simple, stupid. And if you're going to be in the franchise business, it should be something that is what I use, and I don't know if the word even exists, but I call it franchisable, meaning that it's mm-hmm. that it can be replicated and duplicated. And in the restaurant business, that's a very big, important part of the whole thing. You know, can you are there standard ways of doing things that are really, really standard and really replicatable? So keep it simple. And I think the other thing is, follow your passion. If you're really, and I know this sounds trite and you hear it from mm-hmm. a lot of successful people, but it's true. If you follow your passion and you're not, you know, you're not undercapitalized and all the rest mm-hmm. of things, then you will be successful because unless you're completely incompetent. But I mean, it's really the key to success in any business, but particularly in restaurants.
That's fantastic. What was the process of like writing this book, Scott? I mean, how did you go about it? I mean, one of my dreams is to write a book one day. How did you go about writing this book? I mean, did you just sit down? I mean, there's so much in there. I was trying to picture the way you went about writing it.
You know, it's the genesis of the book was that I was at the University of Arizona speaking with Len Jessup, who was then the dean of the business school. Now mm-hmm. he's president of University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And he encouraged me to write a case study for the grad students at Eller School of Business at U of A. And so I started writing it, and I got 10,000 words into it, and I still hadn't opened a restaurant. He was looking at it and saying, you know, you should turn this into a book. And I thought, well, you know what, I can, and I did. And so the process really went like this. I would get up in the morning, write 1,500 to 2,000 words, and then put it away. And then in the afternoon, I'd go back to it and look at it and change it around and what have you. And then the next day, look at it again, and if I liked it, great. And then write another 1,500 to 2,000 words. And that was how the book got written. And it was really the words didn't flow out, I guess, but they were certainly not, it certainly was not a difficult process for me.
That's fantastic. I mean, do you have other books in the work now, Scott? I mean, now that, you know, this book is getting so much attention.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility of another book. It's not about Bubba Gump, but it's about something else. I'm considering it. I know the work involved. So
sure, of course. Right.
And I have a consulting and a practice and a speaking practice and so on. And I have some other businesses with which I'm involved. But I think there's a possibility of another book. Sure.
That's fantastic. What's the best way that our listeners can buy the book, Scott? Are any websites that they go to? Can they go directly to your website or they go to Amazon? What's the best way to get the book?
Yeah, I think the best thing is you can go to IndieBooks or Amazon.com or, of course, almost all Barnes & Nobles are carrying the book. And of course, you can get it in an e-version online at Nook or iTunes.